This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees at 7:33. West Virginia got a glimpse of its newly appointed superintendent of schools yesterday when Dr. Michael Martorano was introduced to a crowd of state employees and members of the media. The appointment comes more than a year into Governor Tomlin's mission to strengthen public education in the state. Ashton Mara reports.
Dr. Martorano. Trust me, I will get that down. I'll just call him Mike from
That's
now
great.
On.
So.
After a few stumbles, Governor Tomlin introduced soon-to-be state superintendent of schools Michael Martorano to a room full of Department of Education employees, State Board of Education members, and the media. Martorano was approved unanimously by the board last week to take over the position in the fall.
A visionary. A transformational leader, a person that could be the voice of education in West Virginia.
Board President Gail Manchin says Martorano is all of the things they were looking for during their nationwide search for a new leader, a search that took more than a year and cost the state some $40,000. Martorano is coming to West Virginia from St. Mary's County Public Schools in Southern Maryland. A Maryland native, he touts his ability to go into a place that's failing its students and turn it around.
When I became superintendent, my current school district, the graduation rate was 84%. As I leave my current county after 9 years later, our graduation rate is 91.5%.
Martorano says he can recreate that success in West Virginia by strengthening the state's focus on school attendance and creating support systems for children both in and out of the classroom, beginning early in the education process. When he takes office, Martorano says he will be focused on improving student achievement, but he also wants to make sure the highest quality teachers are in the classroom, leading West Virginia's students.
For me, it's about recruitment, having alignment with our higher education institutions to make certain that teachers are prepared and that we don't compromise our standards, that we only accept the very best, highly qualified and highly effective teachers in our classrooms.
Martorano has been criticized for leaving St. Mary's County during the midst of an investigation into their increasing deficit. The superintendent pointed to growing health care costs, increasing numbers in the special education program, and a harsh winter for the budget constrictions. Longtime Department of Education employee Chuck Heinlein is filling the seat as state school's chief until Martorano's current contract ends in the fall. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
Three men began an open-ended fast inside the West Virginia Capitol building Monday afternoon. An 85-year-old veteran, Roland Micklem, says he's organized the fast as a way to express his sadness over what he calls the deteriorating natural environment that he's witnessed in Appalachia. Roxy Todd talked with him as he was finishing his first day without food.
Inside the West Virginia Capitol building, Roland Micklem sits on a marble bench, holding in one hand a handmade wooden cane, and in the other hand a small poster that tells why he is fasting. Micklem is here on an extended fast, consuming only water, coffee, juice, and some medication, in order to raise awareness for the various causes of climate change, which he says include mountaintop removal mining.
I don't like to call it protest, but it is a witness, and it is an expression of my genuine grief for the loss of creation.
Micklem is an 85-year-old Army veteran, an environmental writer, and a retired science teacher. At the Capitol building today, he is joined by activists Vincent Irene and Mike Rizel, who are also taking part in this fast. Micklem asked them to help plan this fast, which could go on for days or weeks.
I'm quite willing to fast here until I can't do it anymore or until I die.
Micklem grew up in Virginia in the 1930s. Watching the diversity of plants and animals disappear in Appalachia is what has led him to become an activist.
Takeover of our countryside, as it were, by commercial interests has just destroyed so many of what were once, I call them cherished friends, birds and animals that I learned about when I was young. That kind of turned me into an activist.
The activism Micklem believes in is nonviolent civil disobedience.
That has to be led properly. It has to be conducted with people who have love in their hearts and absolutely no animosity towards the people who will oppose them.
At the end of the first day of their fast, the Capitol building closes, and Miklim, Rizal, and Irene pack up and head back to a hotel. There, they'll rehydrate with fresh vegetable and fruit juice and rest up for the days and weeks ahead. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Roxy Todd in Charleston.
Mountaintop removal mining does have an effect on fish populations downstream from mining operations. That's according to a study just released by the U.S. Geological Survey. As Cecilia Mason reports, the scientist who conducted the study found several reasons.
The study title is a mouthful. Temporal changes in taxonomic and functional diversity of fish assemblages downstream from mountaintop mining, which is a fancy way of saying USGS scientists looked at how well fish populations are doing in streams downriver from mountaintop mining sites. The co-authors are Doug Chambers, who's a biologist and water quality specialist in Charleston, and Than Hitt, a fish researcher at the Leetown Science Center in Jefferson County.
So we were interested in how things are changing with respect to the numbers of species we find and the numbers of fish we find, as well as how they make a living. What are their behavioral traits? What are their feeding traits? What strategies do they use to survive? And by looking at how those things change over time, we can get some clues about what's really happening in the system.
Well, we also, over the overall study, looked at such things as the physical habitat in the stream, and some water quality characteristics.
Over a two-year period of time in 2010 and 2011, Chambers and Hitt collected samples from the Guyandotte River Basin in southern West Virginia. Streams that were studied include the Upper Mud River, the Left Fork of the Mud, Big Ugly Creek, and Laurel Creek. All these streams are downriver from mining sites. Hitt says they were able to compare their samples to data collected in 1999 and 2001 for a water quality study done by Penn State University researchers.
So we were able to ask, how have things changed over time?
The streams in the study contain 25 species of fish that are generally found in an Appalachian stream, including creek chub, minnows, sunfish, and darters. But Hitt says the study shows mountaintop removal mining definitely impacts the fish.
Well, there are two main patterns that we saw. One was a loss of the number of species in streams that are draining active mining operations. So we saw about half the number of species that we would expect to find downstream of mountaintop mining operations. And we also saw a significant reduction in the total number of fish. But not all fish species are doing poorly in those areas. A minority of species can do quite well. So the creek chub, for example, and also green sunfish, those are doing quite well. And there are reasons that we're thinking this might be, you know, explainable. But the majority of species are decreasing in their numbers in these areas.
Chambers says there are many changes to the landscape through the mountaintop mining process, including the way water flows and how it transports minerals, chemicals, and food items.
When you look at a mountaintop removal job, you're taking a pretty massive block of rock, breaking it up into smaller fractions, and then moving some of that to the valley fills. So you've increased the opportunity for contact between the minerals and the rock and the water. So the water that flows out at the base of the valley fills tends to be of a much higher mineral concentration. So basically you've just created a mechanism to move minerals that had been locked up in the rock into the stream more readily.
The water below valley fills contains higher concentrations of selenium, an essential nutrient that can be harmful when too much is consumed.
The mechanism that's probably most likely is it enters the food web and eventually makes its way up the food web to these fish, and selenium can influence their ability to produce viable offspring. So it's not so much that it's being toxic to the individual that's consuming it, but it's reducing their ability to reproduce or actually recruit a new generation into the population.
The study also shows how well the fish survive changes in water quality depends on what they eat. Hitt says the fish with more diverse diets do better.
The fish species that were most likely to be lost from the system over time were the ones that focused on invertebrates in the stream only. Their diets were limited in that regard, but the fish species that could incorporate crayfish or small fishes as adults, those fish were able to do better. So we really see several lines of evidence that losses of the prey base have an important impact on these fish communities.
Hitt and Chambers say the streams used in the study are not popular for recreational fishing, but the results could have implications for bodies of water that are, like the Mud River Reservoir just downstream from the study site. And Chambers says the results can help policymakers as they decide how to regulate the state's water resources.
I think one of the key things to keep in mind is that water resources are going to be a continuing and ongoing challenge. You know, West Virginia right now is blessed with abundant water. The problem is too much rather than not enough. Well, we need to understand the quality of this water. You know, if we're going to continue to have readily available abundant water, we need to understand the processes that affect its quality very broadly.
Both scientists say the study also provides a framework for future research, both in the field and in a lab setting. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Cecilia Mason in Leetown.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:45. Partly sunny skies today with some scattered rain and thunderstorms. Temperatures in the 70s and 80s. A chance of rain and thunderstorms continues overnight and into tomorrow. Mostly sunny by Friday. Marshall University will open a new visual arts center in the fall in downtown Huntington. Clark Davis took a tour of the facility recently and has this report.
Since purchasing the 112-year-old building in downtown Huntington for $750,000, the university has issued $9 million in bonds and raised more than $4 million in private money to renovate the facility. The former Anderson Newcomb Company building that housed the department store of the same name, later becoming the Stone and Thomas building, will now house students starting in August.
Floors 2, 3, 4, and 5, and 6, you come into a space like this, which is...
That's College of Arts and Media Dean Don Van Horn. He's excited about the prospects of the 66,000-square-foot building.
One of the things that excites me the most about it is the opportunities that it presents us to have our students in the visual arts become engaged and interactive citizens with the rest of the community.
The six-story building will house art and design subjects like printmaking, photography, graphic design, and electronic media. Currently, approximately 200 Marshall students are majoring in various visual arts programs. But according to Van Horn, the space will allow them to more than double that number. He says it offers them something they haven't had before. Nearly everyone in one place.
One of the things that this facility does is it brings almost everybody together under one roof. The synergy that that allows is something that you really long for. Now we've got that, whereas before we didn't. And so when you bring all these students together from these multiple disciplines that are really quite different, and you start getting them to work together, it just opens up all sorts of possibilities.
The building was set to be torn down because of water damage and rot. Once the school purchased the building, the renovation work began, which required reinforcing the facility with 65 tons of steel.
It's an example of a space that's probably nearly, it's triple what it was.
With just under 2 months till students enter the center, there's still work to be done, such as moving more of the equipment in to accompany the already present print presses, easels, and digital monitors for the classrooms. Van Horn says the location is important for the university.
It's sort of breaking the model for Marshall, and I think that's important. I think Marshall needs to continue to look for ways to expand, and I think what we've done is we've created an anchor down here, and between here and campus is where Marshall's going to grow, and that just means more access for the community to the riches of the university.
The center, which has classrooms and labs on five floors and a gallery and commercial space on the first, is 8 blocks from campus. Van Horn says the only comparable space that he knows of is one in Columbus, Ohio at the Ohio State University.
14 feet tall. And that we got permission to not lower them.
Sandra Reed is the new director of the School of Art and Design. She's from the Savannah College of Art and Design. She says the idea to use an historic space is something she's seen at her former institution.
In Savannah, they call it adaptive reuse, so it takes a building that was originally some other function and adapts it to a contemporary use, maintaining its facade so it's, you know, recognizable and familiar to everyone, at the same time as putting really whatever one needs and wants within inside.
The center will open in August before the start of the fall semester, August 25th. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Clark Davis in Huntington.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Cecilia Mason. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.